So, firstly, a very warm welcome. Let's have a quiet minute or two together just to settle down, and then the session will get underway. Firstly, very big thank you to Mani, to Sangha Live, hosting this. And I've become rather familiar over the years at the amount of work and support and preparation that goes into the variety of programs. We are all rather fortunate, and with the extraordinariness of useful technology, we can have this access to each other throughout the world. Human beings are quite remarkable in some areas and utterly hopeless in other areas. This is our species. So, in this period of time with you, I'm going to offer a guided meditation reflection at the beginning. This, I think, will be also helpful in coming to the teaching, the talk right afterwards. And then, as Mani mentioned as well, opportunity for questions or responses, either direct using the hand feature or using the chat column there. So just a couple of minutes firstly on the theme. Quite a few of you, but not all, will be familiar with the world of practice. And what I mean by that is teachings and practices which gives us support to our well-being. And this can include mindfulness and meditations and yoga, pilgrimages, time in the nature, retreats, courses, etc. All of this plays an increasingly important part for many of us for our daily life. And of course, as one of those who facilitates various programs to give encouragement for others as well to explore and to step in. It easily can be that one's practice becomes the priority, and that could be, for some of you, the priority over days, weeks, months, and years in a variety of ways, a few of which I just mentioned to you. But there is a purpose to the practice. And in the talk with you, and a little bit with the instructions, sorry, the practice there. And I want to focus on the fruit, the consequence, the outcome, and to bring that, so to speak, much closer. And I'll speak to you about what I mean by that during the course of this session. But firstly, the practice. So this is a guided meditation. The invitation to you is to sit still, whether in the chair like myself, the cross-legged posture, or using a stool, and to remember as well, an important point here, stillness is an extraordinarily important feature of human existence. It is often forgotten, neglected, never given any appropriate attention to, but stillness is allowing the whole being to be engaged in the stillness, which is a liberation from the doing, doing, doing. And when it gets chronic, we call it busyness, being busy. So the stillness is a freedom from that in order to be able to respond to that. More of this in this guided meditation. So in your posture, please to sit tall. Same principle, sitting on the bus or the underground, going to work, in the car, the kitchen table, at the desk, at the car, at the bench, in the park, the upright posture has a quiet authority to it. I'm going to close my eyes. Others can keep your eyes open, half open, closed, as you wish. I will say a sentence or two. There will be a pause, maybe 20 seconds or so, and then another sentence or two. To be still. Not a controlled stillness. But a quietly relaxed stillness. Feel the stillness of the posture. Perhaps there's warmth in the body. Sensations. Revealing more clearly out of the stillness. This stillness of the organic experience connects with the stillness of the material world around us. There is a coexistent stillness. We may not understand the significance of this stillness, of this silence, perhaps because our mind is so conditioned to non-silence, to non-stillness. Your willingness to explore this experience. Is a confirmation of trust. We may have no idea what might emerge out of this. Perhaps much. Perhaps some. A little. Nothing. Right now. In this immediacy. We are liberated, we are free from a lot of busyness, free from a lot of doing and planning. Free from a lot of trying to change things. Trying to keep things as they are. So it's a temporary freedom from. What could be deeply significant in this immediacy of a freedom from? In our stillness, recognizing the absence of the flurry of states of mind, the streams of thoughts and ideas, views and opinions. The emotional waves, So there is the stillness. And a quiet trust. And the knowing of a freedom from. So all of the stories, all the personal history, all that makes up our mind, has gone rather quiet. We are not under the burden. Liberation is very close. Closer than our thoughts. Remaining a minute or two in the stillness. Okay, thank you. Have a sip of the water here. So in this talk with you, I'd like to explore a little further and deeper with the theme. And it may happen that in the Quiet Dynamics of the Listening. A point might register well. And the point registers well, it can bring some clarity and insight. But let me just keep with the theme of liberation. Quite often in the everyday mind of the meditators, of the mindfulness practitioners and similar exercises, the view can arise, and do check in with yourself, if this applies to you, that if I keep on practicing, life will get better. It will get easier, and the practices which I do are a real support and aid. Who am I to disagree? I teach it. So there is a practice which, in everyday language, we call the path. And all sorts of resources, methods, techniques, literature, communication, sharing can consolidate. There is my life. I have a connection with teachings and practices and the benefit of the company of the others, such as we have at this time right now. All of that is important and purposeful, but the view can kind of stick there, and then there's very little reference to liberation, to a real freedom of the being, and the thought can arise for people, or anything like that is so far away. So the mind can feel a gap, a big one, humanly enough, between where I am and enlightenment, liberation, finding God, knowing the true reality. And that thought is persuasive. We are convinced of the truth of it. We say, well, it's born out of my experiences currently. I'm having a hard time. I've got so many issues to work on. I'm in therapy, I'm going to these meetings and these courses and these retreats and that, etc. All of it, humanly enough, is to consolidate a single viewpoint. And it isn't easy, no matter where we are in our life, to say to ourselves, wait a minute. Just because I'm having a hard time, just because I can't be mindful of more than one breath at a time, and I certainly can't focus for two or three consecutive breaths, etc. Just because the teachings are so hard to understand, these are all the rationalizations. However, in spite of all the resistances, all the feeling that the consummate teachings are far away, it could be from your experience, not from the voice talking to you. Wait a minute. The gap may not be that big. That which is of little or no interest to me, because the words sound very big, freedom, liberation, truth, reality, God, or whatever the language we like, maybe the gap is much, much smaller. The guided meditation just now was an encouragement through a resource called stillness or called silence. It is one resource. A second point, particularly perhaps in all times, of course, but the times we live in, it's as though, in my view, we kind of need an ethic which is liberating. This is what I have in mind. Over the years, and a little bit more intensely since COVID, the last 5 years or so, there is a growing and deepening concern about what is happening in our world. And it shows itself in the, I nearly said the word quality, that's too strong, but in the kind of leadership that we see and the significant impact of the leadership, whether it's in the so-called liberal world or the authoritarian world there, and the widespread consequences. Human beings, in a way, we can't keep away from it. Not that we might watch television or listen to the radio or read the news or use the social media. In some way or other, it comes to us. And there is an impact there. And somebody might ask our view. And the world, as a construct, begins to take a grip on our mind. We might call it Ukraine. We might call it Sudan. We might call it Gaza and Israel, Iran, and much, much global warming, loss of resources, population, etc. And in this, the world, general and specific, has its impact, and it seems like hardly possible to stay away from it. It's there. So we have this challenge of the impact of the world around us and our own day-to-day issues as well. The collision of the two is generating a lot of challenge and difficulties. I think what I just said is like saying the trees are made of wood. It's fairly obvious. And ethics in the Dharma teachings has a very important feature to make. Incredibly important. It's a kind of, in my view, a kind of moral empowerment. And what I mean by that is, coming back to the theme with you, liberation, freedom, which includes the expansive heart, is Dharma is not in the business of taking sides. Not in the business of taking sides. The taking of the sides is the perpetuation of the problem. The us and them. Us against them. Them against us. The word in the war situation, in the rich and the poor, in the discriminations, in all the ways that it shows itself, Dharma teachings and practices is not in the business, to repeat, of the us and them. And that's going to require from us If we're deeply interested in a liberated voice, an extraordinary amount of care with what we think and what we speak and what we write and what we do. And in that exploration there, the not taking sides, which is a simplistic, unintelligent, careless way of looking at life, is to explore a completely different question, a completely different standpoint, which is liberating for all. And it's a very simple question. What is the suffering and what is the resolution of it? That is the core issue. And a human being who is not taking sides, doesn't have a prejudice through conditioning, through all the ways that we have been conditioned, isn't thinking or looking in that way, is liberated from worldly conflicts, not through detachment, but through staying true to a core question: what causes the suffering? And what are the steps to resolve it? So often, the liberating question, coming out of care, out of love, out of compassion, there is what these teachings are totally committed to. Watch your voice. Be mindful of what you say. Quite often, with ethics in relationship to liberation, it genuinely, and I hear this regularly, and I've been hearing it for decades, and now it's voices have got louder and louder on this. The multiplicity of the views, whether it's from our leaders, whether it's from powerful people, whether it's on social media, whether it's from family, when that impact comes to us, somebody has a very strong view for this and against that, and the conflict that goes with it. People have been telling me, particularly in the last few years, more and more, they go quiet. It's hard to handle the oppressive voice coming to them. Hard to handle the views, which are sometimes violent, aggressive, full of blame, if not hatred, and a kind of absolutism in the voice that takes place. Liberation is freedom from that kind of voice. Liberation is not adding to it. And we might go quiet, understandably. But my goodness me, to be free from the entrenchment in conflict, global and personal, my goodness me, it's going to take some serious reflection. It's going to take a freeing up of the being with the trust of the validity of what you have to say or what you have to write or to communicate in one way or another. Because if we don't, what will happen? The angry voices will dominate this world. The aggression will dominate. The wars will dominate. The power hungry, craving, desiring for more will dominate. And we'll be left with our complaining. So a response to this world that we live in is the stillnesses I referred to as its best preparation. Secondly, what particular steps? It's a kind of, in a way, moral empowerment, so that we, with our explorations, our concerns, and our practices, find the languages. We're not going to live a fearful, contracted, timid life. And therefore, sometimes, people like myself and others, we might listen. Sometimes it's listening to threats as well, or just aggression. Or a person has given up and has gone quiet like a tortoise contracted into the shell. What are we going to say? What small steps can we make? What questions can we ask? And therefore, that element of being awake, an element of human being to a human being to a group, human being in the written word to a larger group or whatever, is part of what the teachings are. Because it's a teaching of ethics and love and action as expressions of what an awakened life is about, of what a liberated way of life is about. So as I said earlier, the differences between practice and goal actually is very, very close. And the world, with all of its constructions, let us not be a prisoner to it, so that there, in not being a prisoner to it, we are free to express something and to reflect and ask the questions. And who knows what might, small ways, what might emerge from it. Do not hide your light under the table. All right. Let's have a quiet minute, and then for any questions, an invitation. So either with the hand or with the, I've got the chat column up on the right-hand side with the usual diversity of places, always a kind of, as an internationalist, I'm never a nationalist. lovely to see the diversity. All right. So I'll read a point that was mentioned and give a short comment. When I was on retreat with Bhante Gunaratana, he's a much beloved monk, Buddhist monk, I think originally from Sri Lanka, if I got it right, remember rightly. We were offered to take eight precepts, six, seven, and eight were all about wise speech. There are others there. So, the tradition has, in its best sense, has given reminders to us that we live in a coexistent world. Who and what we are reflects on others, near and far, and therefore this engagement is important. And with speech there, to be free from fear, anger, blame, confusion, there are features of wise speech which confirm a freedom, may not be total, but at the time, a freedom which is reducing problematic speech. One, I just mentioned three or four of these. Be mindful of the speech which is backbiting, repeating gossip, which is abstract and theoretical, which is not really connecting with the audience or with the other in front of you. So the basic consideration in communication of the freeing up of the communication is to speak what is true as far as you know. Experience is one authority for that. And the second, it's useful. Sometimes we're saying something to another, we regard it might be true. It may not be useful. So the communication of true and useful is one important feature. A second important feature in the communication, spoken and written, is a communication in which you genuinely have a sense this is the right time to speak to the person. It's the right place. It's the right theme. And the person you're speaking to, the right person to talk to. These small considerations are a valid preparation for communicating with the other. So if we take just your lovely presence here and the time that you've taken, the very fact of your motivation to come to one of the sessions of Sangha Live shows there's an interest, shows an exploration of issues, and therefore I, as the contributor this evening, that this is the motivation, there is the intention. And that contributes to the bridge between us. Sometimes we may have to check that person out with the person who is in front of us. Just ask the person, would you like to hear my view? Ask the person, let's say, who is aggressive, who is taking sides. Do you think there might be another way to look at this? All of that is part of the reflection so that the voices in the world who wish to bring some clarity and love, that we are finding our voice. We're not going to go quietly into the night. So I'll just let some questions are popping up now. What's the Buddhist Dharma? Dharma means teachings and practices and exploration regarding some more modern psychological afflictions like PTSD and attachment disorders, and remaining calm when one's body is having a literal biochemical reaction that's higher than another more regulated participant. How does the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha remain accessible with modern afflictions? Two responses. I certainly empathize with the concern about the wide variety of afflictions, the impact, the suffering impact of them. And it's the finding, if a person is experiencing any of those afflictions, what and where and who is able to give the support. I can't imagine, and I don't know of any particular group, including the Buddhist world, which I know maybe as well as anybody given my age, having all the answers to all the issues which afflict human beings. What I can say is, as a servant of the Buddha Dharma, that regularly people's lives, with all the afflictions that have been referred to and many more, can change through the exploration. But equally important to say, they can change through other explorations as well, in the so-called professional category, other traditions and teachings, other religions, etc. Keep the heart and mind open to the explorations there. So the Buddha Dharma, which has strength, it's got backbone to it, it's got 2,500 years of authority to it there, which is a great support there, has something really important to say. No question in my mind. It's so important in that we can explore practice 24/7. We are not reliant on a method and technique. We're not relying on the weekly visit. We're not relying on the medication, though it may be necessary. We've got the whole day. And we've got the kindness and the good counsel of other peoples in a very big network. And we give the priority to the human being exploring experience and sharing it. And much can happen with that. And it's a Dharma teaching without walls. If something else is potentially or actually serving you in a way which the teachings you've been receiving in the Buddha Dharma world, and you find these other teachings or practices, contemporary or traditional, are working for you, use them. There's no room for attachment to one tradition or one teacher. Use what's beneficial. That's the criteria, true and useful. And just finally, quickly on that, the word attachment in Buddha language and in Western language have two completely different meanings. Don't get them confused. So in Dharma, Buddha Dharma language, attachment means clinging and holding on to something which is causing me suffering. That's what attachment means. Clinging and holding on to something which is causing me suffering. Or others. Hold on to the view of the nation state, it will cause others and oneself suffering. It's part of the problem. And liberation from that clinging and holding can release something else beautiful and profound. And attachment in psychology means, genuinely speaking, a deep connection with another. So parents or a partner or a friend may say, gosh, I have such an attachment with this person or with my children or whatever. It doesn't mean to say they're clinging and holding and suffering over. My ears, when I hear that, it is a very deep connection. Know the difference in languages between East and West. All right. Somehow, I feel my communication is not, let me have the water again, is not useful, particularly when in discussion with others who fear and hate immigrants. You know, appreciate the difficulty. They take quite a bit of work. And if a shift inwardly could be made, is not to go from not with a capital N-O-T, as you can see on the text, not useful, but to useful, because I doubt if a single conversation will reveal it was useful. It may do. But in a way, the middle way between the two, it might be useful. If you find yourself in the position of conflict in the communication, this person is echoing the voices of their government. Too many immigrants, too many refugees, too many asylum seekers. We've got to send them back from where they come from. And besides, they are all, and we heard all the negative judgmental words used about immigrants. Slightly ironic when some of the loudest voices come from a family of immigrants only a generation or two ago. Shows the blind spot. So what here is the fear and the hate, they both go together. They're inseparable in the human being, which takes place. It is not easy to listen to it. And if you present an opposite viewpoint, it might be more useful, compassionate, and supportive. It's very unlikely it will land in the mind where the forefront of consciousness is blame and fear. It's very unlikely to be heard. There. But you can ask questions. You've got to keep your cool. You don't know if it will be useful. You've got to keep your body language rather still. Your voice quite firm. Have a quiet trust in the validity of what you have to say. And stay with it. And if you find it really isn't getting anywhere, and therefore you wish to end the conversation, rather than from a place of contraction and despair, you might say, if at any to the other, this is one thought here, you might say to the other, I feel we're not meeting or connecting in this conversation. But if at some point in the future you feel we could have a communication without this rage or this fear and this blame and this attack there, then I'm open to it. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And some of us have had to use that. So it's not flight. It's not withdrawal. Certainly not afraid of the person. It's eyeball to eyeball. And when you're staying open to having a communication with the person at some future time. Probability is they won't come back to you. But sometimes they do. Never give up. Humans are humans. As we sometimes say of such people in well, we used to, but a generation or two ago, people with a lot of fear and anger, they're all fur coat and no knickers. It's just a noise in the mind, blasting away. Goodness knows what all the background to it is. And we as human beings on the receiving end, whoa, we can handle it. Yes, Jonathan.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, thanks for the topic. I'd like to follow up on this concept of fear. I usually encounter in similar discussions like about immigration or about some wars, people are fearful of the other, and any nuanced kind of probing into that fear drives them into a defensive mode. And it looks like people who are stuck in a loop with their fear, they only want their fear to be confirmed.
Yes.
So what would be a right way to address that, to try to get into it without upsetting them? And
the manifestation of fear can come out through body language, can come out through what is said, what is written, come out through the eyes, all manner and means. We can't work with fear because it's too big a singularity of concept, fear. So everything, including states of mind, it has a relationship to something. So put it simply, fear of what? And when a person is willing to name fear of what, whatever that might be, then the person who is listening can keep asking questions on that. The person may say, "Oh, I'm full of fear. I got lots of fears. I'm overwhelmed with fears." But one's got to go calmly and lovingly from the generalization, lots of fears, and quietly and gently invite the person just to name one or two. And then from one of those one or two, to quietly and lovingly with curiosity, not with the intention to come to a result, ask questions about it. And that will take kindness, so you can be heard, and it will take, that will contribute to trust from the other. You are genuinely, deeply interested. And out of that kindness and trust, a door, a little light may come in. Sometimes you have the opportunity beforehand So that means you already know the person. And if you know the person, you'll know their language, the words that they use, the feeling tones that go with the words. So you have to do your homework of what might be the possible or probable responses from this person when you say something. People, you know, they come out of the conditioning, as we do. And that preparation. And sometimes when we go in, we have some preparation. When something is said to us, which we do not know how to respond to, for all the reasons we don't know what to say, you just be patient. Something in the deep of the being may come through. And you may have to say to the person, look, you've just asked me an important question. Right now, I can't immediately respond to it. Can we just have a quiet minute or two or a few seconds? And maybe something will come through that I'd like to share with you or to ask again. So these are practical, helpful strategies to stay cool and steady in the face of fear. And fear of what? Bringing in the questions. And there may be the moment when you feel there's been enough exchange. Don't wait for the other person. So in that moment, you may say, look, talked enough. I hope this has been helpful. I appreciate your openness and your sharing, you say to the other person. So everything is acknowledged, and we might be able to, we can talk about it another time. So all of this shows there is love and there is empathy there that will develop the trust. You probably hear again from the person. Okay.
Thanks for a great answer.
All right. Well, how we right on the button here, Marnie. Thank you. And Marnie and I were talking a little bit before when we had our check-in meeting. Everything was working well. A little bit about humans and trees and so forth, and the natural world around us. And lots of Dharma teachings on this. So we're talking about possibly at some point in the future making this a theme as well. But just to finish two things. One is, Marnie mentioned with regard to the kind donations that a number of you are able to give. And as she pointed out, the Sangha Live team, with all the outgoing expenses, along with all the time that it takes in preparing before we come together, while we're here together, and afterwards, to ensure that the outreach through all that's available on that Sangha Live website is really flowing on. Some really genuine, deep commitments from the good team there. Without it, you and I couldn't be meeting together. Your support is really appreciated. And of course, for the daily life expenses for myself as well. So a great support. In the exploration today, I trust that it registered well and confirmed in a way with the good questions today, both the chat and the spoken there, of this interactive relationship we have with each other. And a freedom, a sense of being liberated from trapped in the story or trapped in the issue, and that freedom from that gives us the potential to communicate in really fresh ways. And teachings are about that. And it's closer than we think. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you to Sangha Live. Lots of love to you all. Any announcements or anything to say at the end, Marnie?
Well, I think we have a few more minutes, Christopher, if you still do.
All right.
We
Okay.
still have
Yeah. Oh,
hours.
yeah. Right. I'm, gosh.
We
Right.
You might have thought it was at the 15, but it's
I
up.
did. I'm so used to doing 1 hour and 15 minutes. You see how quickly the habit takes over. All right.
Yeah.
So we've got nearly 15 minutes. So I've said what I'm
And
going to say at the end, but is there any more points? Please.
Well, Julieta has one that seems to have Eleanor's interest as well.
All right,
To
okay.
read it, since it's a bit of a scroll, it says, "One, I've. Oh, can you see it?
Yeah, I can see. I've got it.
Okay, you got
All
it.
right,
Okay.
Julieta, here we go. One Advaita, Vedanta. Advaita means non-duality, like I said earlier, not taking sides there. So the heart is concerned and the wisdom is concerned with the suffering, not the taking sides. Vedanta means end of Vedas. This is a bit of a history lesson here. End of the Vedas, fulfillment of the Vedas there. Has very deep, profound teachings in them. Brahmajala Sutra, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, they're all beautiful teachings. Called Mandukya Upanishad, refers to the seemingly real character of reality, reality being like a dream. Kindness, compassion, engagement in the world are important aspects of the teachings of Buddhism. Sometimes I find it difficult to understand and relate to the apparent contradiction of these ideas. Can you offer a reflection on this, please? All right. I won't comment on the Upanishads. I haven't got it in front of me. But what I can say, Dharma teachings. And teachings of reality. The teachings have used the word in kind of conventional and ultimate ways. Let me explain. Suffering is a reality. It's not my projection. It doesn't have to be the projection of the other, but there is suffering in this world. It's a reality of life on earth. And there is no attempt to call it Maya or an illusion or false or whatever. Suffering is experienced as a reality. Along with that, it can only arise because the causes and conditions are there. That's the reality. Not by chance, not by fate, not by the hand of God, not by the devil or whatever. The causes and conditions generate it. In a way, it's my view, of course, it's unarguable. Who knows any suffering that doesn't have causes and conditions to it, etc. The response, a person sent me message email, I think it was just recently, and said, there are human beings with our feelings and emotions, and there is the universe, which is cold and unfeeling. This is the reality. Would question it. It's a duality. There are human beings with feelings. Hot, warm, cold emotions, etc. And there is the unfeeling universe. Teachings are an exploration in which we recognize, this is important here, recognize that sometimes the view that the mind has made about the reality is the view that the mind has made. So, other, in this case, and myself. It's the view the mind has made. But that view cannot come from anywhere else but the mind. Dharma teachings, in its non-dual, to come back there, is true reality. That means ultimate. is indivisible. It's indivisible. It cannot be divided up between other and self. It is indivisible. And the reason for its recognition, that means wisdom, that means realization, is so significant, is that it generates out of the human being, without any effort, what the words use, kindness, compassion, engagement are important aspects. They're incredibly important. And the more we realize the indivisibility and all the problems of all the divisions, the more we realize that, greater love will come from us. That's the teaching. I hope this reflection is helpful, Julieta.
Andrea has one for her students.
All right. One of my students, 17 years old, asked, why do people treat other people badly? Five-star question. Why do people treat other people badly? The immediate response that comes, because the person hasn't realized that the self of the other is no different to the self of myself. That the difference of the self of the other and the difference of the self of this person, it's very hard to find a thought that could convince me that there's a real difference. So in our relationship to others, if we remember the self of one is the self of the other, the life of one is the life of the other, the experiences of one is often the experiences of the other. If we remember the intimacy, we don't have to have done a lot of work on empathy and compassion and love. We just see the truth. It's a simple truth. That's all. Mani has put up the meditations and so forth, the link there. And if Andrea would kindly pass the word on to the student, that to thank her for such a good question, and to keep those precious deep questions alive and well. Keep asking those questions. There are many precious ways to respond to them. The key, as one Brad says, is finding a way to understand the other person's suffering, as that is what is behind their fear, aggression, etc. If we can do that and successfully communicate this understanding, then real communication can begin with the possibility of healing. Really fine, spot on point. Yeah. What's going on with the person? Fear and aggression. All the peace of mind is being burnt up. The love is burnt up. Empathy, the feeling for others. All of that is robbing the person of natural happiness, natural interconnection. Wow. And all the outcome of it, and how much of that fear is a socialized fear. How much of the aggression is socialized through the external circumstances as well as the impact upon a person in their own life? It's rather tragic, and this feeling of aggression, obviously so utterly unnecessary.
There was one question also, as I drop in all of the social media links. Lee has a question up. Let me see. Let me scroll up. Lee's question. Oops, it's way up there, I think. But it is about reducing, should we watch less of the evening news, social media, and free ourselves from the troubles around the world, reduce our suffering, it will?
Whereabouts is it? So I can read. Sorry.
up higher. Probably midway through the entire chat.
All right.
Or maybe you would unmute and ask.
What's the person's name?
Lee Friend.
Who? Huh?
Lee Friend.
Oh, yes. I got it. Hi, thank you. Dear Christopher, should we watch less of the evening news, reduce social media, free ourselves of the troubles around the world, reduce our suffering? I find I have to take a lot of care with this. So, particularly certain situations where there's a long-standing relationship and connection with. So the one immediately comes to mind, between 1992 and 2019, so it's about 30 years, 28 years or whatever, I went annually to Palestine and Israel. So I know these places rather well. And in the support for the lovely people of Gaza that's taking place here in many, many ways, sometimes some documentaries are shown or it's on the evening news. I find for myself, I just have to take care of not absorbing too much suffering. It affects the feeling tone and the heart. So in response, should we watch less and reduce social media, free ourselves from information about the troubles around the world? Can, in the reduction of the impact, leave more space, which is critical, to be able to respond. If you, human, you as a person are absorbing too much, it will paralyze you. You will feel so disheartened. You will feel overwhelmed. What I am doing is so little. What difference does it make there? You've lost your power. You've lost the authority. So do please take care with the absorption of and look at ways, explore ways, listen to people who have other ways of working and are not suffering over because it doesn't help, but through an other understanding and have the capacity to say no when it's necessary. No to the TV, no to the social media, whatever, in order to keep the spirit alive and communicative, not in order to go quiet. All right. We have now reached the 1 hour and 32 minutes. Thank you very, very much for your precious time. I'm easily available on the emails if you have any further questions as well, or I can respond through Sangha Live. Thank you again to Marnie for a good presence. Lots of love to you all. Thank you.